This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 40,000 fermentation enthusiasts from around the world. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for recipes, brewing tips, and conversation. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 26th, 2020. I'm James Spencer here at Basic Brewing Radio. We're all about home brewing. This week, Tricia and Joe Marshall from Lily Bell Meads in Lancaster, New York, share some delicious honey-based beverages, and our friend Paul Morstad helps me sample. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, and if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And I know times are very hard financially for some of you during this crisis. So I appreciate those who are continuing to support the show during this time. I'm producing content for you, so stay tuned to Patreon for more early release and bonus stuff coming down the line. I'm planning to keg a Breese Pale Ale and Cascade Hops Smash Beer today that I brewed this past Saturday. That was brewed with a secret imperial yeast that you'll hear about soon. And I'm very happy about that one. Looking forward to getting that one carbonated and cooled down and ready to sample. Some very sad news coming out of Northwest Arkansas this week. Lacey Bray of Ozark Beer Company up in Rogers wrote on social media that they're having to lay off all of their employees. Apparently, the pandemic has taken away most of their revenue. And they'll still continue to brew on a smaller scale, she said, and you can still pick up beers at the brewery. But they're having to scale back. And so we're looking forward to the other side of this when Ozark can get back up and running full speed. So best wishes to Lacey and Andy and everybody up at Ozark. On the more positive side, I ventured out of the house very briefly yesterday. My family and I have been sheltering in place here at the house. I got to go to Fayetteville to get ingredients from Steve's Brew Shop for the next round of the malt sampler. And on the way back, I dropped by Fossil Cove Brewing to pick up a six-pack and some crowlers. And I talked to Andrew Bland there at Fossil Cove, and he said, although their tap room is closed, they're taking advantage of the new delivery rules, you know, the rules saying that they can deliver beer now. And so they're running beer out directly to their customers at home. And they're even delivering food from the container kitchen that's attached to their brewery. So the situation is affecting different breweries in different ways. So, again, all the best to all the craft brewers out there who are having to improvise in tough times. Here's something from the lighter side from the mailbag. Listener Joe writes, after a long week of figuring out how to work remotely, taking turns watching a one-year-old and a three-year-old between conference calls, wow, and battling hordes at the local grocery store, my wife said those magic words, "My mom can help with the kids. Why don't you brew on Sunday?" Joe says, I write to you today for the first time as my Italian Pils enters the back half of the boil. A Saison and a Grisette sit happily behind me in their fermenters, waiting patiently to meet a smack pack of French Saison yeast. Yes, I triple batch my brew days, but that's for another letter. Yeah, I want to read that letter. Joe says, today I wanted to thank you for all the fantastic years of content. Well, thank you, Joe. And to share my favorite brew day recipe. It's a riff on Ray Daniel's Hot Scotchy. Since my brew day is long, it has to start early. That means coffee. I like to fill a coffee thermos about 3/4 full of fresh black coffee, add a couple ounces of rye/brandy/Irish whiskey, and top it off with a couple brewer's ladles of hot wort. Joe says it's a great treat when you have a long, cold day ahead of you in the garage. Wakes you up, keeps you sharp, and warms you up. I don't know about that middle part, but appreciate the note and the recipe, Joe. Kudos for being able to brew three batches of beer in one day, especially while sipping your coffee, whiskey, and hot wort concoction. It sounds delicious. My question is, what should you call it? You know, Ray Daniels invented the hot scotchy, you know, which is a combination of wort and whiskey. But when you add coffee to that, what do you call that? Liquid inspiration? Shock to the system, maybe? Or maybe a disaster show starter? It depends on how much of the whiskey you put in there, I guess. If you out there listening have any suggestions on what Joe's concoction, brew day concoction should be called, let me know. Might have some fun with that. Now let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. Apparently, this worldwide crisis has reminded a lot of you that you know how to brew. Whether it's stocking up for staying in, keeping occupied while self-quarantining, or just saving money by brewing instead of buying good beer, now's a great time to check out Build Your Own Beer page on highgravitybrew.com. On one page, on a single page on highgravitybrew.com, you can find a whole well-stocked homebrew shop full of base malts, specialty grains, hops, adjuncts, yeasts, flavorings, everything you need to design and put together your dream stay-at-home beer. And the total for your order adds up at the bottom of the window without having to check your cart on another page. So it's great if you're watching your budget. And of course, High Gravity will send it right to your door. If you live in Tulsa, of course, you can order ahead of time, and they'll bring it to your car. High Gravity has an impressive inventory of homebrew ingredients and supplies, and don't forget ingredient kits, too, if you don't want to make up your own recipe. The kits have recipes based on delicious, popular beers from Pippin's Tap Room. And if you have the resources and want to up your brewing game, you can find electric controllers and turnkey electric brewing systems to fit your needs and budget on highgravitybrew.com. If you use the code EBC75BB, that's EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. High Gravity is a family-owned business, which is very important to support in these times. They are longtime friends and supporters of the show, and we are grateful. Take the pain out of propane and brew your way through at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I had a lot of fun talking to Joe and Tricia of Lily Bell, and I'm happy to welcome back good friend Paul Morstad to the show to help me sample some delicious meads. With Joe Marshall and Tricia Marshall, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
It's great to have you on, and thank you very much for sending all the wonderful meads. And I guess I should start off by asking, who is Lily Bell Meads?
Lily Bell is our meadery. We started actually back in 2014. Opened our tasting room about 2.5 years ago, but I suppose we started way back before that when Trish got me a beer brewing kit for my birthday and naturally bought herself a winemaking kit for my birthday. And, you know, we kind of went our separate directions. I made beer and she made wine. She eventually started putting honey into her wines because she was trying to make a blueberry wine that was having some stability issues. By that, we mean corks flying in the middle of the night, hitting walls that we heard in the basement. And eventually just started making, you know, looking to meads and started making meads. And after a while, she wanted to do it as a side business. And I listened to your podcast for a long time. And I agree, if you brewed beer or made wine or mead at some point, you've thought, oh, I want to do this professionally. So I said, well, hey, I want to do that too. And we just started melding the two styles of taking some beer knowledge on my part and mead knowledge on her part. And well, here we are.
Wow. And I understand that there's a connection with Ricky the Mead Maker in there somewhere.
There is. So I had a friend who had been telling me about your podcast for a long time, and I just didn't do podcasts at all. And then finally, right before, he's like, you got to hear this. There's somebody, because we were making dry meads, and people said, well, mead's supposed to be sweet. And then we started just having a lot of doubts. I don't know, is this going to be good? And my friend brings me this podcast of you guys talking with Ricky and Kelly down in Homebrew Con. I don't remember where I said it, so a while back. And we listened to it. We're like, oh my God, this, they've been doing this for years. If they can do it, maybe this will work for us. And we actually reached out to him, and because we were going to Cooperstown, New York. So it's about halfway between Buffalo and Burlington or Colchester, where they were. And so we thought, well, we might as well go all the way up anyways. There's lots of other breweries and things we could do. And he wrote us back and said, oh, you know, that's great, but Kelly's about to give birth. She's due the day after you're coming up here, so we might not be here. And not only were they there, I mean, Kelly, you know, being ready to deliver, they we spent hours there, and they just showed us around, answered all our questions.
Wonderful.
They were wonderful, so supportive, and just basically, you know, very genuine, and just said, of course, you know, obviously you're going to do this, and you know, good luck, and however, and stay in touch. And we have, and we email back and forth here and there, and they've just been just a great resource, and we're just very happy to be part of that mead making community.
Yeah, Ricky and Kelly are great, and we should say that they are with Groenfell Meadery down there in Vermont. And if you're familiar with the podcast, you've heard Ricky on the show. Ricky started off way back in the podcast when he was still a homebrewer and came through town and had some interesting beverages that he shared with us. So it's fun to have, you know, homebrewers to be on the air, so to speak, long enough that we have success stories of people who started off as homebrewers and now have their own successful businesses. So Tricia, what do you tell people that your focus is at the meadery?
I think our focus is using local sources. We focus on using locally sourced honey. And in our area, our beekeepers really focus on harvesting twice a year in the spring, well, in the late springtime, early summertime, and then again in the fall. And those honeys provide different flavors or different profiles and flavors. We also do have some single source honey varietals that we can use. We have one in particular that is produced in New York State that is Japanese knotweed. It's from an invasive species, but the bees love it. And it makes a really unique honey that's very brown sugary. Hmm. And we love using it in some of our darker meads.
And you're aiming more toward drinkable or sessionable meads, right?
Absolutely. Ricky mentioned this, making mead an everyday drink, and we totally prescribe by that too. We really do want to make it something that you go to every day. It doesn't have to be a celebration, but it absolutely could be part of your celebration. But just something that's easily drinkable and you just want to reach for another one.
And I ask everybody or a lot of people who go into commercial brewing, what do y'all think were the biggest challenges in going from home scale to the commercial scale?
I would say, I'll let Trish start first.
regulatory, paperwork, that's the hard part. There's a lot involved with it. You still have to go after it day by day. And that brewing part or the mead making part becomes a very small aspect of what you're doing.
I hear that a lot, too. there's, you know, the government wants their taxes and, you know, there's all kinds of regulations and hoops you got to go through and trademarks and you know, all that kind of stuff. But now we're recording on March 20th and you're faced with another set of challenges, you know, this pandemic that's happening and you know, businesses are shutting down and how is that affecting y'all?
Very much so. I mean, we have in Buffalo area, I mean, we're one of three meaderies. You know, we all keep in touch, but I think we're much more aligned with the brewing community. It kind of makes more sense with our tasting room and our model, maybe more sessionable meads. It's a huge challenge. I mean, it's amazing though how everyone's coming together. You know, most people, and this is what we're doing, is limiting your hours. So we can only do takeout. You know, we can fill a growler, we can sell packaged mead. And then, so we're only doing that for maybe 2 days a week, 3 to 4 hours each day. That cuts down what you can sell tremendously, but I've seen people get just so creative and supportive with each other, like local restaurants and breweries pairing up to do deliveries. And now that we know there's emergency legislation in New York that got passed where we can deliver mead to your door. You can come up, we can do a curbside. You can, it's just, they're trying to make it as possible, as much, as easy as it can be for you to sell what you can in this, you know, highly limited, how do I say this right?
Environment.
Thank you.
Changing, evolving environment.
Yes.
But the other thing I would say is meat producers, we never really fell into a category that was well laid out. Federally, we're wine. State, we're now beer and wine. And it's just it's been an uncharted realm that meat is falling into. And we've had our own sets of challenges going through with labeling and formulations. But now, and even at the state level, our licensing is changing and evolving. And I think that has made us very flexible and adaptable in our business approach. And I think it's just leading us down another path that, all right, this is another opportunity for us to really push online sales and other opportunities of revenue.
Mm-hmm. They recently did the same or a similar emergency act or regulation change here in Arkansas and, as I understand it, in Texas as well. So it's on the one hand, it's good for restaurants and breweries and wineries and even distilleries in Arkansas to be able to deliver. But on the other hand, you've got to figure out how do you do that? You know, there's a brewery in Hot Springs, Arkansas, where I'm from, Superior Bathhouse Brewery, and they've got a big beer truck. So they're, you know, going to be driving around town and delivering beer and pretzels. But, you know, you've got to factor in, you know, that's more labor that you've got to assign to that. And you've got to figure out what's the most efficient way to drive around town and how big your delivery area is going to be. And so in a way, it's a blessing and a curse.
Oh, for sure. And then there's some, you know, we do package some of our meats, but mainly, you know, we're the pub bottle. Our design is that you come in and drink it. So that means, you know, we've got kegs and kegs sitting there, and there's also other breweries around town that have the same problem. And, you know, some of the breweries, one in this area, they actually said, if we have a pressurized tote and you have things in your bright tanks, we have a canning line. We'll come get it from you and can it for you, to make it easier to sell. And to me, I think that just encapsulates the brewing community in general, both, I mean, home brewing and professional. Just people are just amazingly kind and work with each other. Even though they're in competition, so to speak, everyone just wants to help everybody out and see through this until it's, you know, so we can all open up again and get back to doing what we do.
Yeah, well, needless to say, but best of luck in maneuvering all of that. But on to also happier things. You sent me these meads a long time ago, and I apologize for taking so long to get to them. But Steve and I were scheming. We were going to do like a nice, you know, like a beer dinner and pair the meads with different courses and all that. And, you know, anytime you get logistics of, you know, three or four couples involved, and especially when you've got somebody as busy as Steve is with his shop, you know, it just takes time to arrange things. And unfortunately, we kind of ran out of time, you know, because of this situation. So last week, you know, before we went into seclusion, we brought some friends over to the house. And our friend Paul Morstad, who's been on the show before, helped me sample three of the five meads. And we were being extra careful. It was a very small group of folks, and we're all outside on the patio, and we're all, you know, like 6 feet away. The couples were 6 feet away. You know, we were taking no chances, or as little chances as we thought prudent. But we were able to sample these three meads there, and then I have the other two meads in front of me. So why don't we start with the meads that that Paul and I sampled? We've got two that are called. One is called Over the River, and the other is called Through the Woods. And I'm assuming that those are supposed to be paired.
Yeah, they were kind of. Those are. Trish and I wanted to make our, we would say, holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas meads. And so Over the River was the one I came up with, and then Through the Woods was hers. And we just thought it's just they're perfect for that time of year.
So let's talk about Over the River first. Cranberry and sage added to a dark fall honey fermented with a Belgian ale yeast. And it's carbonated at 6.8% ABV. So talk about the brewing process here and the ingredients as well.
Sure. That one, yeah, we use a darker honey. We find that the darker honeys kind of equate it more to a darker grain. Maybe I would think that honey is similar to, say, like a Munich malt or something. So it can handle a little bit more flavor, something a little bit more robust, and it's not going to, it's also going to keep a nice body to it. So that one is, our approach to, especially using beer yeast, we really like what beer yeast do with honey. You're not getting the same esters that you would with grain. I mean, you still get some of that for sure, but it doesn't come across the same way. And it just really accentuates there's a honey flavor. I mean, we ferment these down to bone dry. Some of them are like, these ones are back sweetened, but you know, these get down to 0.998 on a hydrometer. There's still honey flavor there, even though the honey sweetness is gone. And we find that a lot of times the beer yeast really help with that. They really help keep the honey flavor, even though you've made a very dry mead. So with that one, we did that. And then cranberry and sage is my two favorite flavors from Thanksgiving. My mother's stuffing is very sage forward, and I love cranberry sauce. And I'm one of those heathens that likes to mix everything on their Thanksgiving plate. So I just thought when we were coming up with this idea last year, year before, we just thought, I thought those are my flavors for Thanksgiving. And then we just actually, to add the sage and the cranberry, we make a cranberry sauce, so to speak, a very large cranberry sauce, and use honey instead of sugar. And then we add that to back sweeten it and get those flavors in. And then from there, it goes into keg and onto tap.
So this is force carbonated.
Yes, it is.
And the and I'm debating on whether to go onto the tasting of this individually or to. Yeah, let's go on to the tasting of this one individually, so we can give it give them both a good share of talking. Here is our friend Paul Morstad and me sampling Over the River. Paul Morstad, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
It's great to be back. It's been a really long time since I was talking with you on here.
Yeah, and in the background we have our families and our friends and about 1,000 robins in the trees.
The robins are really loud. I hope they're coming through on the mic.
It's the environment. It's the background.
They're migrating.
So what we're tasting here is from Lily Bell Meads. We're tasting the Over the River, which is a cranberry and sage added to dark fall honey, fermented with a Belgian ale yeast. So it's delicious, first of all.
Yes, it definitely is. Oh, I'm getting the sage now. It just needed to be warmer. That's what was wrong.
Yeah. It's chilly outside.
Yeah.
But the cranberry comes in at the front. But I was expecting, when I saw cranberry, I was expecting like ocean spray, you know, cranberry cocktail or something. But this is not that at all. It's nicely balanced and very drinkable. Two phrases that I say a lot in this show.
I couldn't agree more. It's got a nice dryness that I really appreciate, and the carbonation is really light, but it totally enhances especially the cranberry.
Yeah, the sage is coming through, and it's adding a savory character sort of to the brightness of the cranberry. But then there's also you know, a lot of the honey character left over in there to make it, you know, to make it taste like a mead instead of like maybe a fruited apple cider or something.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you there. I said that before, but I still couldn't agree more.
Well, that's another favorite phrase of mine, that when other people say it to me. I couldn't agree with you more.
This would be a fantastic it would be a fantastic aperitif Thanksgiving thing, but man, it would, don't you think this would go with stuffing? I mean,
Yeah, definitely. and it would be a good palate cleanser after you get done with like turkey and gravy.
Yeah.
And also as at that end of things, you know, you got all these heavy foods
and then
you got this thing to kind of like clean the palate, because it is really, it's not, the cranberry is not enough to where it's tart, but it's just on the edge of that.
And the honey's not enough where it doesn't have a sweetness that a lot of meads have, which I don't mind. We all like that about meads, but the dryness of this one is just, it's hitting the sweet spot for me.
Yeah. Very nice.
No pun. No.
So delicious. I thought it was extremely light and dry, and the cranberry, as I said in the recording, was not, you know, ocean spray cranberry drink cranberry, but it was nicely balanced with the sort of savory character of the sage, and there's a nice tartness, or there's a nice acidity in these meads. Are they what do you attribute that to? Is that just the cranberry?
I think so. I think it's also just some of the, even though we've back sweetened it, we have gotten it down to a dry point, which does cause a drop in pH. And sometimes we will correct that drop because we think it needs to be a little smoother, a little more rounded. And sometimes we leave it because we find it just honey without the right acidity. Honey in meads can be, it's kind of a bland flavor. And we just think that with the carbonation, we feel just kind of elevates that to a nice, I guess, a crispness and cleanness in the finish to where you want more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, as Steve says about wine sometimes, it's not flabby. Yeah, it's very drinkable. Whereas if you don't have something to balance sweetness, even though this is a very dry beverage, if you don't have something to balance that sweetness, it is a bit much and kind of lays there on the tongue. So Trisha, Through the Woods, is that you?
Through the Woods was mine, yes.
And it's sweet potato.
Yes, I know.
Sweet potato and
back from that too.
Sweet potato and allspice added to a dark melter's honey and fermented with a wine yeast carbonated at 6% ABV. So what, you know, when I looked at a sweet potato mead, I had certain things pop up in my mind, but what led you to going that direction?
So again, Joe and I were trying to pair like a seasonal flavor. And when I think of, when I start creating recipes, I think of what's going to pair well with honey. And my first thought, or maybe not first thought, but one of my thoughts was about the sweet potato casserole that everybody has on their Thanksgiving table. When we bouchet a honey, we often get those caramely, marshmallowy flavors. And that's why I thought a bouchet honey would help in a sweet potato casserole recipe. So that's where I got my inspiration.
And where did the sweet potato come into the process?
It came in secondary.
And just typically in beers, you know, you want to mash the starches, you know, to turn those starches into sugars. But so the sweet potato just went into the mead in secondary?
Yeah. So yes,
a lot of it got all over our system mead maker too. We should know.
Yeah.
A few nucleation points on those sweet potatoes. But.
Yeah. So we don't heat anything. We don't heat our honey other than to warm it up and mix it into the water. We don't heat process much of our stuff. So we didn't, feel like that the sweet potato in primary would be, necessary, but we also added it in secondary in hopes of getting a little bit more of that sweet potato earthy, flavor to it.
And how did you, were they chunked or how were they prepared?
So in this case, normally we use a lot of fresh produce. In this case, we ended up cheating with canned sweet potatoes.
Ah.
Secondary.
It was a lot of sweet potatoes.
It was a lot of sweet potatoes.
And did you see fermentation kick back up again once you put the sweet potato in, or is it just for flavoring?
It's more for flavoring than for the sugar content.
Okay. And then you pair that with allspice.
Yes.
Okay. So now we go back to the patio, the chili patio, and we, Paul and I, taste Through the Woods. Okay. This is Through the Woods, sweet potato and allspice added to a dark melter's honey and fermented with a wine yeast. So the first one was kind of light and a little bit tart with some cranberry notes and a little bit of spice. This is more kind of like, I get more of a, you know, more of a pumpkin pie kind of a thing going on.
Yes, definitely. And there's like there's a fruit thing going on to this one that I can't quite pinpoint, but the nose for sure, pear and apple and something, but it has a really knockout scent, I think, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the flavors, there's a sweetness that's in this one that wasn't in the other one, but there's a tartness as well.
I'm wondering, you know, what do you think comes along with the wine yeast versus the ale yeast in the mead here?
Well, the Belgian would add more kind of a fruity ester kind of a thing going on. The wine yeast, depending on the strain, would probably ferment maybe. Well, I guess, and again, it depends on the strain, but I would assume that the wine yeast would be more clean. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. The mead in general is more wine-like. Mm. I mean, oh, if that makes sense.
But it's tart. But then I do get the kind of savory. I probably couldn't identify it as potato, but I would think like in a pumpkin pie, you know, that kind of vegetal character in a good way. And then, but then at the end of it is the spice. Yes. So it is, and again, it's not heavy at all. It's very cleansing. Again, it would, like, after a piece of pumpkin pie or a piece of pecan pie, you have this, and it cleanses your palate. But then it also complements what goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that I think of it, maybe the wine-like for me is the tartness masquerading as acidity, so to speak. You know? Yeah. Absolutely. I'm with you there completely. It has that sort of. Neither one of these really linger on the palate very long, and they're very clean tasting. But the Yeah, the allspice and the sweet potato, I still can't get over the nose on this thing, but yeah, in the mouth, it's fantastic. It's really good.
Yeah, we're out here. We got the fire pit going, so my nose is a little masked by the... man, it's delicious. And, you know, I was a little intimidated when I saw sweet potato in a mead. I was like, you know, is this going to be gimmicky? You know, is this going to taste too much like a pumpkin pie or a sweet potato pie? But it doesn't.
No.
It's well balanced. Again, I say that word, but it's nice and cleansing. It's not heavy at all, but it's very drinkable and cleansing. And the fruit flavors, the tartness and the spice, it just all goes together well.
I don't know about you, James, but I kind of like to drink mead by itself. I mean, you know, just enjoy it by itself. I kind of am that way with sherry too. But these two meads are very food friendly for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very nice. I don't know what I was expecting, you know, when I saw sweet potato in a mead, but I was expecting something more gloppy.
I think a lot of people expect that. A lot of times when they come into the tasting room, they would see that, they go sweet potato, and they give us that look, kind of like, did you mean to write that? And We just tell people just try. And actually, I mean, it's been a very, very popular mead. People have been very surprised when they try it. Like, oh my gosh, this is, what do we, people always say, that's actually not bad. And then we'll joke around and say, well, that's what we shoot for.
So it did have a, you know, some of that pie character in there. But again, without being, you know, kind of sickeningly sweet and gloppy and, you know, and just lying on the tongue, it was kind of bright and drinkable and, you know, just, again, well-balanced. So nice job.
We also added just a note that we did add a little bit of Boucher honey to that batch, and I think that helps to bring it down a little bit, make it a little earthier, a little bit more rounded.
And for those who are new to the mead-making world, what is Boucher honey?
Well, actually, we learned about it from you.
We did. That's true.
A Boucher honey is one that's been heat treated and cooked down to a caramely. We like to do it on a dark style, dark caramel color.
So it's you just heat it and it gets darker and darker and the flavors intensify. And do you get different flavors? I would think from the different varieties of mead. Or different varieties of honey, rather.
For sure, yeah. I mean, you're taking all the everything the bees have gone to, where they've gotten their nectar and pollen, all those things, all those plants that have gone into the honey. We always tell people it's kind of like a reduction sauce. Think of like you're taking all those flavors and intensifying them. And so you're good. Yeah, if you have a lighter spring honey here in Western New York that is, it's going to be from light, you know, tree flowers. It's going to be, it's almost, I almost get like a black tea flavor from local honey. Think about that from that spring honey, and that's going to be accentuated once you bochet it. Whereas if we have a darker fall honey, which may have like goldenrod or, you know, some more robust flowers in there, you're going to get that. It's the same thing with those. They're just, you're going to intensify those different flavors from those different plants.
Mm. Now, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip the third tasting from Paul and me, because, you know, that was one called Honey and Hops. But now that we're talking about Bochet, the two meads in front of me are Bochet based. So I've got Bobby, which is a Bochet style mead, very dark and roasty with sweet bourbon and toasted marshmallow notes. At 13.4%. And then the Humble Braggot, which is your first experiment in braggots, a Belgian-style stout fermented with Bochet honey and a Belgian ale yeast. So which one should I try first of those?
Oh, gosh. I guess I would try the Braggot because Bobby's kind of a palate wrecker. So yeah, I guess I would try the Braggot first.
Okay. All right. So I'm pouring. Ooh, nice and dark. And it's actually got a nice head on it, which a mead wouldn't, by itself would not have a nice head. But this is a Braggot, which is a mixture of beer and mead, I'm assuming. So talk about this one while I sip.
Sure. This one, the beer part of it, the base, is a pretty simple light stout recipe. A little bit of midnight wheat in there. And chocolate malt for the color, and then pretty much two row, and a tiny bit of crystal malt. And then we took some of the Bochet, the darker Bochet honey that we'll use for the Bobby, or that you'll taste soon. And with this one, we actually fermented them together with the Belgian ale yeast. A lot of times we look to actually ferment them separately because we think, especially with a light, if we're going for a lighter Braggot, that those two fermentations are very different. I mean, I know you've brewed beer and mead. Mead, I always tell people, mead, you barely know it's fermenting. It looks like a soda pop almost. There's just little bubbles popping off the top until you get in there and your nose burns from carbon dioxide. Where with beer, obviously you get a Krausen and you can see it's a vigorous fermentation. But with this one, because we had the darker honey, we fermented them together because we didn't think they, in the other case, we think that the fermentations are going to battle each other a little too much and one is going to win out over the other. You're not going to get a beer flavor. You're not going to get, know that there's a honey in there or a mead. With this one, we did them together because we figured it could handle it.
Mm. It's very nice. And the head is you know, the foam is sticking around on the top of it. It's lighter in body than you would think, like a stout would be, which you would expect. The honey is going to be a lighter body beverage. The Belgian character in the yeast comes through nicely. You get the dark character from the dark honey, as well as the grains, too. I'm thinking.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, and that's what we think. There's a nice floral finish to it as well, which I think with a beer, people, you're expecting almost like bite at the end. With this one, you get beer in the front, and then it finishes kind of floral at the end. At first, it's almost like I don't know what I think about that. But then once after a couple of sips, we found that it was like, all right, well, that's, and again with Braggot, there's so few of them commercially. We didn't even have many examples of them to buy.
Yeah, it's very nice. My wife Susan is a fan of dark beers, and she's going to like that one. I think it does combine the best of both worlds. You know, Steve has made Braggots in the past, and I think this is along the lines of that. I think, that's a compliment. Steve, his Braggots are nice and beery, but then there's that, you know, there's that extra honey character in there that really brings it to the next level. That's very nice. So do you, I would imagine that with the Braggot, you don't have to worry too much about yeast nutrient, or what's your strategies on yeast nutrient in general? And do you have to change those when you ferment a Braggot?
I guess I'll start with the Braggot question. No, we did not add yeast nutrient to that one because we have such a grain. You have the nutrients in the grain. We weren't too worried about that part. Otherwise, with our meads, we do add nutrients. We dose them up front, actually. We use We use DAP mainly, and we just do a lot of we just make sure it has a nice addition in the forefront, and then we also tend to make starters still. We find that if you add, like, especially with beer yeast, if you add that right to a mead, it's going to struggle a little bit. It's we actually use an example I heard here. It might have been from Ricky also, but the idea that if you just eat sugar all day, you're going to feel like crap at the end of the day, and the same way. And so you have to give them a good nutrient base, but they also need to get used to that environment, even with the nutrients. So we generally will start and then make a starter, so that it's really about second generation that we're pitching into each one. But we find when we do that too, those yeast are happy and they're ready to go. I mean, we see, we did a batch about a week ago. We pitched that yeast and I saw active fermentation in about 4 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And what size batches are you running?
Right. We started off with 4 2-barrel fermenters. I mean, we still will do 10 gallons at a time sometimes just for one-offs. And actually our customers get really excited about those. And sometimes we joke around, we don't know why we do those experimental ones. Those are always in 10 gallons. Those are always the ones people love and then say, why didn't you make more of it? But we also just added 3 7-barrel unitanks as well. And so that because we really do want to start pushing out a little more into distribution, especially kegs, into a lot of the local breweries. A lot of people are looking for a gluten-free option. And it's also something that's just a little, you know, very different than, you know, say cider or wine, which are already gluten-free, and being sessionable and a little bit more beer-like at times. People are looking for them, and we do a lot of beer festivals, and we are, I think people are going to be excited to see that a little more around town.
Yeah. So, Tricia, talk about the Bobby.
Oh, Bobby. Well, our inspiration did come from one of your podcasts.
Pretty sure it was you guys sitting around a pool and somebody talked about making it in a crock pot, if I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's Tim Lieber.
Yes.
And we did have our fair share of crock pot disasters.
Oh, yes.
Well, you must share.
Joke to tell you. Oh,
yeah. They're mainly my disasters, so go on.
But what we ended up doing was, we heard the podcast. We were very, very intrigued by this idea of a bouchée, of a caramelized honey. And so we kind of took it and ran with it. And what we ended up doing was doing a bench trial of different percentages of bouchée per batch. So we did 3 batches. We did one that was 25% bouchée, 75% wildflower, one that was 50-50, and one that was 75% bouchée and 25% wildflower. And they were ready by Super Bowl Sunday, so we took them to our friend's house and did a little focus group experiment.
All a bunch of homebrewers.
Yes. And wanted their input. We got their input. They liked the 50-50 style, or the 50-50 percentage. And so we kind of did that, scaled it up, and that's Bobby.
Wow. Well, it is about the color. How would you describe the color? It's about the color of a brown ale, maybe. Not quite the color of a, or at least in my little cup. And the it at 13.4%. It's big, but you know, it's not knocking me over with that alcohol. You know, the alcohol is not hot, and it seems very well fermented. There's enough. Do you know what the finishing gravity is on this?
It varies a little bit each time, because when we bouchée, we have to we caramelize that honey so dark that once it cools a little bit, we add some warm water to it, because if we don't, it turns into basically rock candy. We were candying it, so that the amount of water varies a little bit. It's usually between about 10.20 and 10.24. I believe that one was 10.20.
Hmm. Yeah, it's got a nice finishing gravity without being sweet. You know, this isn't a sweet beverage. In fact, there's a little bit of a acidity or a little bit of tartness. I don't know if that comes from the roasting or the roasty notes.
Yeah.
But what yeast did you use with this?
That's 71B.
Yeah. Huh. I used a wine yeast in this one.
It's nice. It's very nice. And, you know, I'll use my word drinkable. It's just, you know, you could drink a lot of this in a hurry and not and be in trouble.
It's seen that happen.
Yeah.
Not recommended, by the way. Not endorsing that behavior.
You actually three glass limit per person per visit at our tasting, because we've seen that where people, oh, this is great, and we warn them, and then they don't listen, and then they kind of look. They, we always say they walk around looking like birds with broken wings, kind of walking in half circles, and be like, okay.
you've had enough.
So now we learned that mistake early, and we should say we made sure those people got something to eat and got home safely. But you know, now we limit the intake per person.
Hmm. Wow. There's you know, that caramely, roasty character at the end is really nice, and it lingers a little bit on the tongue. But I've had Boucher meads that were delicious, but they weren't as drinkable as this, because the residual sweetness or that residual roasty character just kind of hung around, you know. And so when something is laying on your tongue like that, you don't want another sip. But with this one, you know, you take a sip and you go, wow, that's delicious, and you want another sip right away. So, again, nicely done.
Thank you.
Now the last one is honey and hops, which is a wildflower honey fermented dry and finished with Cascade, Chinook, and Centennial hops. All New York State ingredients, it says here on the list, at 9.3% ABV. So talk about how this was made.
This was kind of when we talked earlier about, you know, okay, we're gonna do a meadery together. Well, and of course, me being a beer brewer, I'm like, well, we have to do something with hops. So this is kind of where we first came together. And
and our flagship. This is our flagship mead. This is really the first one that we worked together on. I brought in the wine yeast and Joe brought in the hops. And I'm not a big fan of hops, but this one I can absolutely drink a lot of.
And I'm assuming that are they all dry hopped?
Mainly. We mainly put them in. We put them in usually towards the end of fermentation. This one also finishes at 998. This goes in usually when it's down to about 1010, 1006. Although I do think with this batch, I think I actually did this experiment a little bit and put them in once it had actually cleared. More of like what you do with like a West Coast style IPA.
Well, it was very nice. Oh, spoiler alert. Now we have to play the clip with Paul and me tasting the honey and hops. Here we have honey and hops. Wildflower honey fermented dry and finished with Cascade, Chinook, and Centennial hops. This is carbonate. 9.3% ABV, all New York State ingredients. So this is it is dry. It is... You said it was a mead that smelled like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. So
that's what first got me on the nose. It's not. It doesn't seem as strongly carbonated as the Over the River, but and I'll have to say the first few sips, I didn't quite know what to make of it. There's a lot going on, it seems like, but then as I've tasted it more, I really have come to enjoy it more.
It's got a lot of a lot of honey character. In fact, there's a little bit of like a honeycomb. You know, have you ever chewed honeycomb or eaten honeycomb? Wax, there's a wax, kind of that honeycomby kind of character. It has a little more mouthfeel than the first couple we had. It's higher in alcohol, so you might expect that. I don't know, but it's nice. It's a fun. You get the hops, but then you get the honey. I mean, the honey is, to me, this is the strongest in the honey character of the three that we've had.
Yes. It's like a taxi with hops, mellows you with honey, and then leaves you with a lemon on the back end, I would have to say.
And we like lemon on the back end. That's that's just a personal preference.
I can't say anything to top that.
No, this is nice. I've had hopped meads before, but I can't. You know, it's been years since I have. But this is nice. This is again, it's entirely too drinkable to be, you know, 9.3%. That would be something that would, you know, sneak up on you in a hurry, because it's certainly not. It's well made, and that there's not a hotness from the alcohol. Mm. You know, it's fermented well. It's crafted well. So
yeah, absolutely right. This would definitely sneak up on you if you were if you weren't ready. Yeah, for sure.
Tasty.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
So I think Paul nailed it. I think he said it's a mead that smells like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. It definitely melds the two together. It crosses that line and does it well.
Thank you. Yeah, I was very happy to hear that comparison. So.
And we had a little bit left in the bottle later on, and it was at. I guess it was like 50 degrees outside or something like that. So I was able to sample it, after it had warmed up a little bit. And it was, of course, even better. The hops opened up even more. And the balance of the hop character and then the honey character, it was all very nice. So, again, very well done. And it, kind of made me want to do one. It's been a long time since I've made meads. I'm a bit, still a bit intimidated by them. They're in one way because they're just different from what I'm used to, but in another way, Steve is so good at making them that it's. I hate to put mine up in comparison, but I greatly appreciate y'all sending these meads, and I'm sorry it took so long to get around to them.
Oh, no problem.
No
at all.
Problem. So, usually age well.
Yeah, that's right.
So I hate to ask what's in the future, in these tenuous times, but what are your long range plans?
Well, I'm going to be starting to look into exploring the higher end of mead, higher end meaning the higher octane meads with some more of a liquor flavors.
Hmm.
So I think one of the things that I wanted to push with meads is that meads are so versatile. If you think of meads as just a honey sweet wine, you're kind of missing out on where it's going. It is all over the place. We are making session meads. We are making traditional meads. We are making fruited meads. But now we are also making meads that are a little bit more liquor. So like Bobby's a perfect example. It's got more of a bourbon flavor, that burnt flavor to it, and pushes it more into the liqueur style. And liquor style. And that's where I think we're going to end up moving a little bit towards. We've gotten our hydromels or our session meads, definitely working with beer flavors and all those beer yeast and bringing those flavors out. But now I think the next step for us will be the higher octane, unique flavors.
Would there be barrels in the future?
Oh, yeah. So oh,
actually, I meant to say we did do a barrel age, Bobby. And so we'll send you a bottle of that.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I'll allow that.
We're also looking to take our meads, some of them down in ABV a little bit more, but say below 6%, and do some canning runs and start getting meads out into more beverage stores right next to beers where they're more readily available. And definitely our braggots too, because that's such an unexplored realm. And we actually have a one barrel brewery that we just opened in conjunction with the meadery, so it gives us easy access to doing that as well. So,
well, this has been a lot of fun, and I put the cork back in the Bobby, and I'm going to save some to share with Steve when we can finally get together, because I know that he will enjoy this and best of luck to y'all in these times, and I hope to hear from you again in the future.
We'd love to talk in the future.
Thank you.
Again, thanks to Tricia and Joe, and also thanks to Paul as well. What a great couple. I just love their positive spirit. By the way, a little trivia. The name Lilybell was inspired by their daughters. A little ray of sunshine here this week. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. Or please don't forget to tell us where you're from while you're writing. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. So long.